from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, we hear from the U.S. Senate candidates who faced off in Kodiak a week ago over fish. Bering Sea crabbing kicked off over the weekend, but to no fanfare. And folks in Southeast are trying to make your food local. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Four candidates for U.S. Senate participated in Kodiak's traditional fisheries debate last Wednesday, and for 2 hours answered questions about everything from naval exercises in the Gulf of Alaska to which federal fishery they would participate in if they were fishermen. Panelists posed questions to Republican incumbent Senator Lisa Murkowski and challengers Democrat Ray Metcalf and Independents Breck Craig and Margaret Stock. Among the other subjects was the topic of monitoring programs and the best way to keep members of the fishing industry accountable. One of the panelists, Julie Bonney, asked about the Partial Coverage Observer Program in the North Pacific. She said $1 million from the National Marine Fisheries Service budget was used to supplement that program, but the funding ended this year. She asked the candidates if that shortfall in funding should be rectified and how. Murkowski said Alaska leads in putting observers on vessels, but monitoring is about more than just the human observer.
It's what we need to be doing with electronic monitoring. We recognize that nowadays we can all do so much with any kind of an electronic device, so making sure that NOAA is moving aggressively on electronic monitoring is another part of this answer when it comes to observing and making sure that we're all accountable here.
Stock agreed and said that electronic monitoring will save valuable fisheries resources.
The cost of an observer is probably much more. It is much more than going to new forms of technology such as the new age electronic monitoring. So I'd like to see more funding going into the things that are probably going to be giving us accurate data but are less expensive. And a combination of observers and electronic monitoring seems to make sense to me from a cost-benefit analysis.
Later in the debate, panelist Jeff Steffen asked whether the candidates support electronic monitoring, and if so, how they would assist its integration. The round of questions began with Metcalf.
I think that electronic monitoring should be required. I also think that observers should be required 24 hours a day if you're going to fish 24 hours a day. And if there's ever a dispute between the observer and the fishing company, you have a monitor there to verify what happened or at least look to for hopefully some backup on who did what.
Craig said he also supports electronic monitoring and pointed out that hauling an observer around can be a burden on smaller boats.
I think for the larger boats, the larger operations, absolutely you have observers and you have monitoring. For the smaller boats, it would be nice. It kind of speaks to what Margaret said. You know, they are expensive. And if the government's going to pay for it, you know, we are the government, we are the taxpayers, we should deploy the monitoring devices where we can. But if it's a big operation, a big boat, you should probably have both.
Not all the topics were about federal fisheries issues and tax dollars. The four also answered a round of more personal questions. The first directed to Stock from panelist Bonnie.
What is your favorite Alaska seafood and how do you like it prepared?
Actually, it's rockfish because I'm a kayaker, ocean kayaker, and I ate a lot of rockfish on my honeymoon. So it has very warm memories for me. I kayaked from Cordova to Whittier with my new husband. We got to know each other very well, and we caught a lot of rockfish on the way from Cordova to Whittier, and we prepared it every night pretty much in a frying pan with a little butter. It tastes really good that way when it's caught fresh.
So just for future lightning rounds, we're hoping people can restrict their answers to 10 words or less. Representative Metcalf. Same question. What is your favorite Alaska seafood, and how do you like it prepared?
Alaska crab, and I like it prepared very quickly.
Mr. Craig.
I'm a salmon man, and my wife barbecues it.
Senator Murkowski.
I am halibut and salmon any way that it's prepared, and I probably have it five times a week. Wow. Never get tired
That's
of it.
That's two fish, not fair.
Yeah.
On the whole, the fisheries debate remained a civil platform for the candidates to stake out their positions and plans for the future. Libertarian candidate Joe Miller skipped the debate. Two recent polls commissioned by Murkowski and the Alaska Dispatch News show Miller running a distant second to Murkowski, followed by Metcalf, then Stock.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org. The Bering Sea snow crab season opened over the weekend, but thanks to a drastic quota drop, fishermen will be limited to less than half of last year's harvest. It's been bad news across the board for commercial crabbers in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands. In addition to the snow crab cut, managers have canceled the region's Tanner fishery and continued closures in the Pribilofs and St. Matthew Island.
Sort of a theme this season. Everything's just kind of below threshold, and we're not seeing a lot of recruitment right now.
Miranda Westfall is the area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She says all species are showing low numbers of juvenile crab, just as they have for the last several seasons. While that's disappointing, Westfall says it's not surprising given recent environmental trends.
You know, we're still really warm in Bristol Bay, and the crab tend to seek colder waters. So I think it's probably more temperature related and more just the regime that the ocean's in right now.
But not everybody buys that explanation. After the Tanner stock fell short of the minimum threshold by nearly 2 million pounds, the Bering Sea Crabbers Association sent an emergency petition to the Alaska Board of Fisheries last month questioning the accuracy of the summer trawl survey and the conservative management strategy, which some say relies too much on female biomass. The cities of Unalaska and St. Paul also signed the petition, which was denied. But Westfall says the Tanner crab closure makes sense after last year's stock assessment.
The females were at the threshold, so they were just barely above that closure threshold. And so we sort of expected this season, if things hadn't turned around, that it would close, and it did.
Managers have also closed the blue king crab seasons for St. Matthew Island and the Pribilofs. St. Matthew's up and down fishery missed the cutoff by just 88,000 pounds despite opening the last two seasons. Meanwhile, the Pribilof fishery will remain closed for the 18th year in a row. After crashing in the late 80s, Westfall says the blue king crab stock is still struggling enormously with less than 1 million pounds in the water.
The population was considered overfished, and it's just failed to rebound. It's kind of a heartbreaking one.
While fishermen wait for other stocks to improve, the snow crab season opens with a harvest of 21.5 million pounds. And with crab season open, Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak Cruise opened a seasonal forward operating location in Cold Bay last Saturday. Coast Guard Air Crews transferred equipment and aircraft to Cold Bay to reduce the response time to fisheries in Bristol Bay, the Bering Sea, and Aleutian Islands. Coast Guard cutter with a Kodiak-based MH-65 Dolphin helicopter will also be on patrol in the Bering Sea. An MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter deployed to Cold Bay will rotate personnel each week, along with logistic flights by a Kodiak-based HC-130 Hercules. Through the end of the Opelio crab season, with a scheduled break between December and January. Captain Mark Morin, Air Station Kodiak commanding officer, said the station in Cold Bay can eliminate hours of flying time transiting from Kodiak during maritime emergencies. Air Station Kodiak sets up 3 forward operating locations throughout the year to cut down on response times to mariners in distress. During the summer, helicopter crews are deployed to Cordova and to Kotzebue.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. MC@AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
Southeast food producers and fishermen may be able to expand their markets in the near future. The Southeast Watershed Coalition is working to set up a system to sell and distribute local foods throughout the region over the next 3 years. KSTK's Aaron Bolton has more.
The Southeast Watershed Coalition received a $500,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture in late September to set up a distribution and sales system for Southeast-produced foods.
Part of it is developing a regional food hub that will help to aggregate and distribute local foods throughout the region.
That's Watershed Coalition Executive Director Angie Flickinger. She says the second part is helping provide the tools necessary for existing and potential food producers, as well as direct market fishermen through workshops and an annual conference. Flickinger says the system would be based on an online marketplace, allowing producers such as existing farms in Haines and Petersburg to sell their products throughout the region.
And we would allow consumers to go on there and purchase foods, and then we would set up distribution centers where we would aggregate those foods and then either ship them out or set up a date where, you know, if we had a distribution center in Juneau, folks from the community could come and pick up those foods.
She says the coalition plans on building 2 distribution centers in Juneau and Haines. Both would offer cold storage facilities for perishable foods, and all of the products would be certified by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Flickinger says this idea was sparked from a feasibility study the Toshnock Watershed Council did last year, examining the market for local foods in Haines.
And so they did some research into the market and their community and some of the producers that exist. And so that kind of helped spawn this concept where we thought, you know, if we combined a lot of these producers who are, you know, based throughout the region, we could create a bigger market and make it more accessible.
The coalition will work to identify producers throughout the region. Flickinger says the first conference will take place in Haines in early 2017.
But our hope is that once we can get the food hub model established and that infrastructure sorted out, that it will be a self-sustaining program in the future.
Flickinger says the delivery of food will be based on access to each community, and more information will be available as the program progresses. Partners Ha'ani, Sea Alaska's nonprofit arm, the Sustainable Southeast Partnership, and the Toshnak Watershed Council in Haines have jumped on to help fund the program. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KMXT's Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, KUCB's Laura Craigle in Unalaska, and KSTK's Aaron Bolton in Wrangell. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.